Oh, the adventurer did tell me he wanted an answer by the end of tomorrow, else he'd announce it to the other adventurers.
That should give us more than enough time to work with, I stated, motioning towards the rest of the camp. Let's go see if we can find him, or the rest of the guild near the kitchens. I'm sure that most of the groups have to be back by now.
All right,
Ritt said, turning around as the two of us moved to leave the crafting area.
Coming, Jenkins.
Nah, the smith grunted. If Lyrian's gonna babysit and keep you out of trouble for a bit, I'm gonna use the time to get some work done.
Ha ha!
Ritt retorted good-naturedly as we departed the area.
I'll see you-
No sooner did Ritt and I step out from behind the large blind that concealed the crafting area, did a running blur slam into us, the impact sending all three of us tumbling to the ground in a confused tangle of limbs and shouts.
What the hell?
Ritt wheezed in pain, winded from the impact.
Jeez, man, what's the hurry?
I grunted as I pushed a pair of legs off me and twisted my body in the direction of whomever had just crashed into us, only to find myself staring into the panicked and pale face of Ignis.
Oh!
Ignis gasped as he struggled to take a deep enough breath, a wave of fear briefly flashing through his eyes as he recognized me.
Rain coming! I didn't do it, but...
Rain? I repeated, not able to make sense of what the man was trying to say, nor why he appeared so frightened. It's gonna rain outside?
No!
Ignis said, letting out a ragged cough as he inhaled a lungful of air.
There's a train coming!
Wait, what? I exclaimed, a surge of adrenaline shooting through my body as I forced myself up. What do you mean?
We were just in the jungle and...
Ignis stammered, still trying to catch his breath from his recent exertions.
They just came out of nowhere! Everywhere!
What came out of nowhere, Ignis? I demanded, feeling the bottom of my stomach fall out from under me.
What did you lead back to the camp? I don't know, he said. We just ran and... Oh, no! There it is again!
There is what? I started to shout at the man for a second time, when a mental voice I had heard before filled my mind, causing my blood to go cold.
Invaders! Kill the invaders! They did this to us! Kill them! Kill them! Kill them!
Chapter 46. We barely had the time to process the screaming chant that pierced through our minds before a pair of head-sized emerald blurs shot down from above us, prompting a surprised scream from Ignis as he dove out of the way.
Shit! Look out!
He wailed as he hit the ground hard and attempted to roll away from whatever that was attacking him.
What the hell did you do, Ignis?
I demanded, the words flying out of my mouth as I drew Splinter and instinctively charged towards the spirits, scanning the two identical tags that appeared in my vision. Ether-bound Phantasm, level 17. The half-elf stammered incoherently in response as I swept Splinter's edge through the center of the closest spirit, which then immediately exploded in a blast of searing energy, prompting pained screams from both Ritt and Ignis.
No, don't hit him! They explode!
Too late for that warning, Ignis!
I barked angrily, having taken the somewhat painful blast at point-blank range. I began to rapidly back away from the second spirit as it twisted in the air to face me. Fixing my attention on the angry spirit as it glared at me with an angry wail, I was immediately reminded of the ether-bound shades that we'd fought in the dungeon above us earlier in the week. But where a shade had been a full-bodied spirit, the phantasm was only a floating head, surrounded by a mane of dull emerald energy, its facial features grossly deformed from whatever it once represented in life. Yet despite its lack of a spiritual body, I realized that it did little to hinder its movements, as the phantasm shot forward through the air, crossing the little distance I'd been able to put between it and myself in the blink of an eye.
This is the absolute last thing that we need to deal with right now!
The angry thought couldn't help but cross my mind as I threw myself into a desperate roll to evade the oncoming spirit. Completing my dodge as the phantasm soared over me, I wasted no time in launching myself back up onto my feet, conjuring and throwing a flaming dagger at the spirit in one motion, which promptly exploded in a harmless spray of energy as soon as the hurled knife touched it.
Shit, Lyrian!
Jenkins' voice shouted from the entrance of the crafting area as the blast from the phantasm filled the air, temporarily basking all of us in an emerald light.
What the hell is going on?
We're under attack by spirits from the jungle,
I replied as I moved to check on Ritt, seeing that he'd only been lightly singed by the first phantasm's blast.
Ignis here dragged them back to the camp. He did what?
Jenkins snarled, his voice suddenly laced with a cold rage that I'd never heard from the man before.
I didn't realize they were still following me,
Ignis protested as he scrambled up from his prone position on the ground.
I save it,
I barked savagely as I pulled Ritt up to his feet while glaring at the man. You've done enough already. We're under attack, I sent to Amaranth, taking advantage of the first free moment I had to collect my thoughts.
There are spirits invading the camp. We are aware,
my familiar replied less than a heartbeat later from his place on the opposite side of the camp.
Their chant awoke us all, and we are rousing ourselves now.
Good, I sent back to the cat. So far doesn't look so bad. Maybe we... As if drawn by the timing of my words, several loud screams suddenly echoed throughout the camp, interrupting my train of thought, which was followed closely behind by the rapid thunder of magic as other adventurers discovered the attacking spirits.
Damn!
I cursed, my head snapping in the direction of the noise. I had no idea just how much Ignis had managed to pull back through the jungle with him, but judging by the growing cacophony around us, it was far more than the two phantasms that had just attacked us.
Just fight your way towards us when you can,
I sent back to Amaranth as quickly as I could, watching an errant streak of magic fly high up into the cavern before fizzling out in a spray of sparks.
What's the plan, Lyrian?
Jenkins asked as he drew a heavy sword from his belt, his eyes darting over towards Ignis, who had finally managed to regain his feet.
What do you mean, what's the plan?
Ignis replied, his voice tinged with panic.
We need to keep running and get the hell out of here!
Running is what got you into this damn mess,
I hissed at the man angrily. No, we need to rally as many of the adventurers as we can before we lose the camp or even the entire ruin.
Oh, shit!
The half-elf's reply was cut short as a massive shape chose that moment to crash through a pile of crates that had been stacked opposite of the crafting area, its landing reducing them to splinters.
Oh shit, doesn't even begin to describe our problems right now, Ignis!
I shouted as Ritt Jenkins and I reflexively scrambled to put some distance between us and the horrific patchwork creature that had just crashed through the crates, followed closely by a blast of magic that washed over its grotesque body. With negligible effect, from what I could tell.
What the hell is this thing?
I thought as I glanced at the abomination before us, feeling my heart skip a beat as an identifying tag appeared in my vision. Ether-bound monstrosity, level 19. Seemingly made from a patchwork of flesh, hide, and chitin, the monstrosity was a nightmare to behold, appearing as if a mad god had decided to tear a handful of the grove creatures to shreds before combining them together without regard to any of their original forms. At a glance, I could see the dark leather hide that once belonged to a troglodyte covering one portion of the body, with a dull gray chitin of a gloomstalker covering its back and chest, leaving the familiar quills and the flesh they were attached to of a quill bear to cover even more. But for all that it had stolen from the grove creatures, it wasn't enough to fully clothe the spirit. Glimpses of its ghostly form shining through the torn patches of flesh that it had covered itself in.
Gods!
Jenkins gasped in a strangled voice as the monstrosity slammed a massive spectral arm, bereft of any flesh, into the ground and forced itself back up onto a pair of mismatched limbs, one bearing the graceful leg of a gloomstalker, with the other being the short and squat leg of a troglodyte.
What? Don't let it get up!
A loud, familiar voice interrupted the smith as a second wave of magic slammed into the creature, followed by a group of charging adventurers with their weapons outstretched before them.
Hit it with everything you have!
That's Alistair's voice, I exclaimed, spotting the man a heartbeat afterward as he led a pair of guild members I recognized and a few other adventurers I didn't to attack the still-rising monstrosity. Not waiting for a written invitation to join the fight, I sprang forward to assist, charging Splinter with a shocking touch as I ran.
Let's go!
Expecting everyone to follow on my heels, I put the group out of my mind as I rushed towards the monstrosity, it only taking me 3 long strides to close the distance and enter the fray. Announcing my presence with a loud shout, I swept Splinter through the large spectral arm that the monstrosity had planted on the ground, feeling the blade pass effortlessly through the limb, discharging the energy stored inside it as it did. At that same instant, Alistair and the other adventurers arrived, swarming around the creature and landing their own punishing blows. Staggering from the barrage of attacks, the ether-bound spirit faltered in its attempt to right itself, several bright sprays of energy erupting from its spectral body, causing it to let loose an unearthly wail. but despite its apparent pain, the monstrosity was far from being finished. Reflexively swinging its other arm, which appeared to be covered in a layer of troglodyte hide, in a wild arc before it, moving faster than either of them could react, the sweeping limb caught a pair of the attacking adventurers high in the chest and sent them both sailing off their feet and out of sight, a distant tear of cloth and crunch of wood marking their landing.
Lyrian!
Alistair called out a second afterward, not having missed my arrival.
What the hell's going on? Where are more of these things coming from?
Ignis found them,
I replied, stepping around the now flailing monstrosity until I was directly behind it, slashing out with splinter as I moved and drained what mana I could from the creature.
He pulled all of them back to the camp from the grove.
Are you?
Alistair's reply was abruptly cut off with a loud grunt as the creature's thrashing reached a new level of intensity, forcing me to take a large step backward as a massive arm swept through the spot I was just standing in. With my reflexes having been honed to a razor's edge after an entire week's worth of fighting in the grove, I waited just long enough for the creature's attack to pass, before launching myself back into the fray. Burning through my mana with reckless abandon, I thrust another shocking touch-charged splinter into the monstrosity's body as I re-entered melee range, then immediately slashed a burning dagger through the flesh covering its side. Howling under my blows, the spirit's movements became lethargic as the energy animating it fled its body in large spurts from the multitude of wounds now covering it, the creature's flagging efforts allowing all the other adventurers, along with Jenkins and Rit, to close with it, their weapons tearing into its spectral form. With a shout of triumph rising all around us as it lost its shape, the ether-bound monstrosity's body dissolved into a spray of energy, the flesh and hide covering it falling to the ground lifelessly once more.
Rit, Jenkins, you two okay?
I called out the moment that the fight ended, my eyes worriedly darting over towards the pair, who I knew would have been grossly outclassed by the fight, yet hadn't hesitated for a heartbeat to jump in.
I'm fine,
Rit said, breathing heavily from the short fight.
Same here,
Jenkins answered, a heartbeat behind the merchant.
Never in my life have I seen anything like that thing.
Neither have we.
Alistair stated, shaking his head as he stepped over the remains of the creature, casting a dirty glance at Ignis, who had taken up position a few steps away from us.
Until today.
There'll be time for blame once all of this is over,
I said, seeing several other eyes turn in the direction of the elf. As much as I wanted to figure out exactly what Ignis had done to drag a horde of spirits and ghosts back to the camp, we had more pressing matters to worry about right now. But right now, we need to move and start rallying as many people as we can. And then fight to save the camp, I added pointedly, turning my head to glare at Ignis, who at least had the decency to not look me in the eye.
As much as it pains me to say, Lyrian, I don't know how much we'll be able to help to fight these spirits,
Jenkins stated in a steady voice.
But we're with you, whatever you need.
I understand, Jenkins, I said with a nod, thankful that the man had recognized his limits on his own and wasn't afraid to admit them. I'll take this group and head to the sounds of the heaviest fighting and try to hold the spirits back. If you and Rit could comb the rear of the camp for any adventurers and send them forward, that would help us greatly. The same goes for evacuating any townsfolk down here to the surface.
We can handle that,
Rit said, relief evident on his face that he wouldn't be heading straight to the front line.
Right, Jenkins?
We can,
he said with a nod, though his expression was one more of frustrated resignation of his inability to compete with the attacking spirits than relief.
We'll stop first at the healing ward with Shelia, and warn her to expect casualties. If she has any spare healers on hand, I'll be sure to send them forward too.
The more help I can get on that front, the better,
Alistair agreed enthusiastically.
I won't be able to keep up forever.
All right,
I said as a new rush of magical thunderclaps sounded through the air.
That's a good enough plan for now. We need to move.
With that, we split up from the two NPCs, both Rit and Jenkins turning to run towards the rear of the camp, while the rest of us charged in the opposite direction, heading towards the sounds of combat in the distance. Positioning myself at the rear of the party as we ran, I made a point to keep a sharp eye on Ignis, not putting it above the half-elf to attempt to slip away during the chaos. I might be actually doing him a favor if I let him run, assuming he runs as far as he possibly can away from Aldford, I thought, teeth clenched. If the other adventurers ever find out that he's responsible for dragging a train into the camp? I shook my head at the thought, unable to bring myself to care what sort of vigilante punishments the rest of the adventurers would inflict if that happened. Maybe if they were severe enough, it would serve as a good enough deterrent for any other adventurers, thinking to do the same thing the next time they found themselves in over their heads. Assuming we have the next time, I couldn't help but add, thinking of the disaster it would be if we were forced out of the camp and had to fight through the ruins a second time. With a sharp shake of my head, I forced myself away from that train of thought and decided to focus on what I could control, mentally reaching out towards Amaranth. "I've regrouped with Alistair and a bunch of other adventurers," I told my familiar, sensing that he had made progress in moving through the camp since the last time that I'd spoken with him. "We're moving through the camp for survivors."
"So are we," Amaranth replied. "Thrace, Constantine, Thorn, and a few of the other guild members are with me, but we haven't seen any of the others yet."
"They have to be around here somewhere," I said confidently, hoping that they had managed to survive the spirit's surprise attack. Turning my attention back towards our rush through the camp, I followed Alistair's lead as the priest guided us towards the sounds of combat. Rounding a sharp corner, the source of the noise quickly became evident as we spotted a large group of ether-bound shades that had managed to completely encircle a handful of adventurers. Judging from the twin piles of grove creature flesh lying on the ground a short distance away from the circle, they had already managed to take care of two of the large monstrosities. But the sheer number of attacking shades had been too much for them to handle. At least until we showed up.
"Rush them!"
Alistair shouted from the head of the group, making the same decision that I would have in his place, prompting everyone to break into a sprint.
"That means you too, Ignis!"
I yelled, noticing that the half-elf was hesitating in following Alistair's lead and delivering a rough shove to get him moving.
"Go!" "Damn it, Lyrian, I'm going!"
he shouted, stumbling for half a step from my rather forceful encouragement, but regaining his balance and charging forward without any further complaint. Following close on Ignis's heels to ensure that he didn't have a change of heart, I found myself slamming into the spirit's ranks with him by my side, before losing sight of him in the melee. Focusing on driving through the line of the shades before me, I found myself reliving the desperate fight that we had the previous week at the infected ether crystal. Countless shades had packed themselves on top of one another, their incorporeal forms allowing several of them to occupy the same space at the same time, making it nearly impossible to defend against them without constantly giving ground, a feat that was next to impossible for the encircled adventurers to manage indefinitely. Yet that same fight had also taught me how to use their packed numbers against them. Slashing Splinter in a wide cleave, I swept the ether-touched blade through the ranks of shades before me, feeling a trickle of mana course up my arm with each and every spirit that it passed through. Putting that energy to use immediately, I channeled it back into a shocking touch and slashed my sword through the wall of spirits a second time, seeing several of them fade away into nothingness as the magic binding them failed. Within seconds of our arrival, the tone of the battle shifted as the shades registered our presence and a ragged cry rose up from the trapped adventurers.
"Help is here, everyone!"
Sierra's tired voice rang out from inside the circle of spirits.
"Now's the time to hit them hard! Push!"
"Sierra!"
I exclaimed in relief at having found one of my friends as the trapped adventurers answered the woman's words with a shout and charged forward into the line of shade, separating us with renewed energy.
"Lyrian, is that you?"
Sawyer's voice called out from inside the circle.
"Damn, I thought we were done for!"
"Not by a long shot,"
I yelled as I sliced through a confused cluster of shades, all of whom seemed to have a different idea of who or what direction they should be facing. Pinned between us, the shades separating our two groups rapidly began to disintegrate as we carved through them, their ranks falling into complete disarray before finally vanishing in a spray of emerald energy. Continuing forward, we charged to support the once-trapped adventurers, and slammed into the second line of shades that had encircled them, our two groups managing to easily overwhelm the remaining spirits.
"Great timing, Alistair. Lear,"
Sierra said breathlessly after the last shade had fallen and our area was reasonably safe for the moment.
"Things are looking pretty bad there for a second. Do you have any idea what's going on? Where the hell did all these things come from?"
"The Grove. And I'll tell you later,"
I stated, shaking my head before jerking it in Ignis's direction.
"There's no time to get into it now. We need to keep moving. We have no idea just how many spirits are attacking us."
"A lot. Assuming that what we just faced is any indication,"
Sawyer growled but nodded in agreement with my statement.
"Let's go. We can catch our breaths along the way."
Taking a brief moment to consolidate our two groups, we resumed our search through the camp, the shouts and screams that had been echoing through the air earlier having faded as the surprise of the attack wore off and adventurers began to fight back. Using the sounds of fighting as a beacon, we rushed towards them, looking to rescue and relieve those who found themselves under attack. As the minutes passed, we gradually found ourselves working towards the front of the camp as we moved, coming across several groups of both adventurers and spirits, adding the former to our ranks while ruthlessly dispatching the latter. "Rah!" I grunted as I slashed a crackling splinter across my body and into the slow-moving leg of an ether-bound monstrosity, feeling the tip of the blade shred the layer of gremlin hide that armored it and discharge itself into the spirit underneath. No sooner did my attack land than I yanked my blade back towards me, using its edge to intercept the outstretched claw belonging to a shade that had chosen that very moment to press forward. Just barely slicing through the wrist that the claw was attached to in time, I was then forced to twist my body awkwardly to avoid a vengeful fist belonging to the monstrosity that I'd just injured a heartbeat earlier, the movement putting me square in the path of yet another shade's claw that I hadn't seen until it was too late to avoid it. Hissing as the spectral claws bypassed my armor and raked my chest, I forced the injury away from my conscious mind and returned the favor to the offending shade, slashing Splinter through its head and seeing it vanish in a dull flash of energy. Bringing Splinter before me, I turned my attention back towards the monstrosity, just in time to see Sawyer's axe sweep through its ghostly head, the attack causing it to vanish in a spray of energy and for its body to lose its shape a second afterward. "It's down! Everyone forward!" I called out the moment that I saw the massive spirit disintegrate, all the melee adventurers in the ragged line on either side of me rushing against the shades that had clustered around it. Weapons flashed and magic thundered through the air as we rushed the now unsupported shades, their numbers far too few to pose any threat without the monstrosity hindering our movements.
"I think that has to be it for the stragglers,"
Sawyer said to me after the last of the shades had been killed, the two of us watching Alistair and a few other healers rush forward to heal the newest group of adventurers that we had rescued.
"Anyone else has either linked up with another group and moved on, or didn't make it."
"Looks like it," I agreed, glancing around the disrupted camp all around us, hearing the constant thunder of magic and shouting echoing from further areas of the camp. "Let's get..." A near-deafening boom of magic echoed through the cavern, cutting my words off as it reverberated through the chamber. Glancing at Sawyer in a momentary surge of panic, I felt Amaranth's voice shout through my mind.
"Where are you?"
my familiar demanded, a wave of exhaustion seeping through our link.
"We need help urgently."
"We're around the middle of the camp," I replied to Amaranth, instinctively glancing in the direction that I sensed him in, finding him near the camp's entrance. "What's happening?"
"A horde of the Deathless are erupting from the tunnel,"
he answered almost instantly.
"Our numbers are too few to hold them back for long."
"Shit! Okay, we're coming as fast as we can," I sent back, my feet already in motion as I signaled for everyone to follow me. "We need to move! More spirits are coming through the tunnel!" Fueled by a sense of urgency that I'd never felt before, I sprinted through the heart of the camp towards where I sensed Amaranth to be, all the other adventurers rushing to follow behind me. With the camp passing by me in a blur, it wasn't long before I saw what my familiar had warned me about, my heart skipping a beat as I took in the battle ahead of me. Glowing with a bright emerald light, a massive horde of shades and monstrosities filled my vision, with several dozen of their phantasm cousins soaring through the air high above. Before them I could see a large group of adventurers that were clearly trying to keep them from overrunning what remained of the camp, but were gradually being forced backward, lest they end up enveloped by the attacking spirits.
"Oh, damn!"
I heard Sierra's voice exclaim from behind me as we ran, followed by countless other, far more colorful curses from the adventurers following us.
"You could say that again!"
I called back, catching sight of Freya's spear as it briefly appeared over the thickly packed horde of spirits, as a large number of them suddenly swarmed forward and over the group's flank closest to us.
"Shit! They're getting overwhelmed!"
Pouring on every ounce of speed that I could muster, I charged forward towards the advancing spirits, watching them curl around the group's edge, quickly beginning to surround them. But before the spirits could completely send the adventurers into disarray, we arrived, slamming into their extended line unexpectedly and scything straight through it. Within seconds, we cut down dozens of the attacking shades and had them back on their heels, erasing all of their forward progress they had managed to make, as well as giving the beleaguered adventurers the time they desperately needed to reform their ranks. You guys made it just in time! Freya greeted us with a relieved shout as both she and Amaranth fell in on either side of me as the ranks organized themselves, my familiar rushing to reunite with me the first moment that he could. We barely had enough time to form lines before they hit us!
I know the feeling,
I replied with a grimace as I slashed Splinter through the horde of shades in front of me.
It's been like this the entire trek through the camp!
Before either of us could say anything more, the spirit surged forward to meet our reinforced ranks. A new level of ferocity appearing in their attacks. Forced to focus solely on staying alive under their onslaught, all rational thought fled from my conscious mind as instinct took over, guiding both my blade and body to wherever they needed to be at that instant. Flashes of combat intermixed with fleeting moments of pain were all that I could remember from the next few minutes that passed, the battle descending into sheer chaos as the living desperately tried to outfight the dead. It wasn't until I found myself taking a step forward that conscious thought began to return to me, several more steps passing until I finally realized what was happening.
We're pushing them back!
I shouted as I took yet another step forward, seeing that the endless wall of spirits before us had thinned and was no longer as thick as it was before. I could even see the tunnel looming in the distance ahead of us, the once flood of ghosts erupting from the passage now only a trickle.
This is our chance!
I roared, thrusting Splinter in front of me as I felt a second wind surge through my exhausted body.
Everyone charge! Send them back to the hell they came from!
A roar rose up at my words, and all the surviving adventurers leaped forward with renewed energy as we cut through the scattered ranks of shades and monstrosities. A staccato of magic momentarily drowned out our cry as the few still standing mages spent their last dregs of mana and rained down a hail of missiles on the spirits before us, their efforts adding to our momentum. Charging at the head of the group with Freya and Amaranth on either side of me, we blazed a path forward and before long found ourselves rushing through the tunnel. Slowing ever so slightly as the terrain shifted under us, we relentlessly pressed onwards and eventually found ourselves on the very edge of the Twilight Grove. Resisting us with their last dregs of strength, the spirits put up a desperate effort as they tried to stop our progress, but they didn't have anywhere near the numbers that they had at the beginning of the battle, and the result was a foregone conclusion. A crackling slash of Splinter combined with a powerful spear thrust marked the end of the last monstrosity blocking the tunnel to the grove, causing a ragged cheer to rise from the adventurers in the front ranks as it died. Yet even as the spirit faded, I noticed that a pale emerald light remained in the tunnel, shining through the nearby entrance. Exchanging a worried glance with Freya, the two of us rushed forward into the Twilight Grove, Amaranth and all the other adventurers following closely.
Oh...
I breathed as I looked out over the distant jungle, standing in the very same spot that I had been when I'd first laid eyes on the place.
Oh no. What happened?
Freya whispered from beside me.
This?
Her words trailed off as we all focused on the distant ley line. The once azure light emanating from it was now a sickly emerald hue, bathing the entire cavern in its eerie light. We all stared onwards wordlessly for several seconds, the only sounds filling the air being the scuff of feet and everyone's labored breaths. Then, without warning, a sudden tremor shook the entire cavern around us, causing everyone to shout in surprise. Reaching out reflexively, I grabbed hold of Freya as the two of us staggered from the unexpected earthquake, but managed to stay steady on our feet. Ending as quickly as it began, the shaking stopped, and the distant ley line pulsed before growing ever so slightly brighter. At that same instant, a soft chime that I'd never heard before sounded in my ear, followed by a bright text that filled my vision. A world event has begun. Deep within a forgotten place, a legacy of a bygone age has been awoken, bringing forth a vengeful host denied passage to their eternal slumber. Driven by vengeance against an ancient enemy, they will reach for a river of unimaginable power, corrupting it with their foul touch. Unless their efforts are checked, they will bring about a cataclysm the likes of which the world has never seen, bringing ruin to the region and beyond. My blood ran cold as I read the alert, and I felt Freya's grip tighten on my arm. Tearing my eyes off the ley line, I turned my head slowly to look at her. Staring back at me with a numb expression, I saw her shake her head in disbelief, her mouth opening and then closing. Unable to find any words to say.
Lyrian,
she finally managed to get out on her second attempt, turning to look back towards the ley line as she spoke.
What are we gonna do?
I don't know, Freya,
I replied, feeling a heavy lump form in my throat as I too looked back at the ley line, watching its emerald light play off the cavern walls.
I just don't know.
Chapter 47. The aftermath of the battle took us a few hours to sort out. At first we all found ourselves sitting on pins and needles overlooking the now tainted grove, as we nervously waited for a follow-up attack from the spirits, or some further sign regarding the world event that had just started. But after a calm and eventless first hour, we all decided that there wasn't a second attack coming and turned our attention towards the damaged camp, making sure to leave a handful of vigilant guards to watch for any sign of movement from the distant jungle. For the next 2 hours that followed that, we picked through the damaged and in some cases still burning remains of Camp Sentinel. After getting the fires under control, it didn't take us long to determine that the grove-facing side of the camp was a complete write-off. All the furniture, tents, and supplies that had been unlucky to find itself there had been destroyed or scattered during the chaos, making it easier for us to simply clear it all away and start over again. Thankfully, however, the rear of the camp escaped with only superficial damage, isolated to the few sections where the spirits had managed to rush ahead before being pushed back by adventurers. On top of that, the more critical camp features, such as the kitchens, the crafting area, and the healing ward, had escaped without so much of a scratch, allowing everyone to focus their attention on putting the place back together again. I was confident that given a day or two, the camp would be back on its feet and back to normal. The problem I had with that thought, though, was that I wasn't sure if we had a day or two to spare. In the few hurried conversations that I'd been able to have with the group, everyone seemed to be thinking that the world event that we'd seen after successfully defending the camp marked the start of the countdown before the ley line erupted. The only problem was, is that none of us could venture a guess of just how long that countdown was, which was why the six of us were looking for Ignis and the rest of his group in hopes of getting whatever answers we could from them.
Finished getting your stories straight?
The harsh words left my mouth the moment that I spotted Ignis and four of his newly resurrected groupmates huddled together, all of them whispering to one another in angry tones. Yet the moment that they heard my voice, they all stopped, spinning to face me and the others with looks of both anger and guilt written across their faces.
Lirian!
Ignis greeted me in a tight voice, his eyes widening, then shifting off me once he realized that I wasn't alone.
He said you wanted to see us?
Oh, we want a hell of a lot more than that,
Lazarus hissed from my left as everyone fanned out to surround the five adventurers, setting the tone for how we expected the conversation to go. Holding my question for a moment, I waited until Freya, Constantine, and Sierra finished moving, breaking eye contact with Ignis to look down at Amaranth beside me, who'd begun to growl angrily.
It is not too late for me to demonstrate my rage upon them,
he told me in a seething tone.
Allow me to maim or kill one. It will ensure that they answer our questions honestly.
Oh, I think they know all too well already how much their situation depends on an honest answer, I replied to Amaranth, despite sharing in his thoughts. After the battle was over, it had taken every single ounce of restraint in me not to publicly call Ignis out about dragging the spirits to the camp in earshot of the other adventurers, knowing that they would be quick to express their displeasure on the man. No, as much as a dick move it was, I instead decided to hold that particular threat over Ignis's head until I found out what happened in the grove and where the spirits had come from. If I didn't like his answers, then I would be more than happy to let words slip where more adventurers could hear and let nature take its course from there. A course that I expected to be incredibly painful for Ignis and his group, and would likely result in them being forced to leave Aldford entirely, something that I knew he was all too aware of, given his rather subdued and anxious demeanor. So, I finally began, making eye contact with the man as I spoke. What the hell happened? I knew it was a simple question to start with, but I wanted to see just how much Ignis and his group chose to reveal on their own accord before we started asking more pointed questions.
We fucked up,
Ignis said simply, his shoulders drooping downward at the admission.
Well, that's not exactly a surprise.
I think we were expecting something with a bit more substance, Constantine replied dryly from his spot in the circle. Specifically, how did you fuck up?
We were exploring the grove and trying to find a way closer to the ley line, Ignis elaborated, pausing to glance at the rogue contritely. But instead of going through the heart of the jungle, we decided to cling to the cavern walls, you know, to see if we could bypass it entirely, like you usually could in other games without anything jumping us.
Sure, I replied, watching the half-elf's head turn back in my direction at my comment. Hugging the border of a region or zone had been a tried-and-true tactic for gamers of all stripes over the decades, allowing them to use it as a relatively safe path and bypass higher-leveled creatures that would otherwise kill them.
Well, it kind of worked, Ignis said. It took us a bit of time to figure out.
And several broken ankles and legs,
one of Ignis's groupmates, a male elf, added.
But today we finally managed to climb past the majority of the jungle and towards the far side of the cavern,
Ignis finished, nodding at his companion's interruption as if pain and suffering would somehow gain our sympathy.
Fantastic. You can climb a wall,
Lazarus grunted, unimpressed by what he had heard so far.
Fast forward to the part where you nearly doomed all of us and kicked this event off, if you don't mind.
In that case,
Ignis stammered, a brief wave of annoyance crossing over his face at the half-giant's comments before vanishing.
It all started when we found where the ether leaking out of the ley line ends up.
That bit of information was enough to get everyone's attention.
It feeds into a large lake, for lack of a better word,
he continued, sensing our sudden interest.
It's nothing like Crater Lake, but there's a large chasm that the ley line is slowly filling on the far side of the cavern, similar to the one that we have on this side, separating us from the jungle. I have no clue how deep it is, but it stretches almost the entire length of the far wall and curls back towards us. We were forced to get off the wall because of it, actually.
Why? I asked, while trying to picture just how much ether must have leaked from the ley line in order to fill that volume.
Ether sickness, Ignis stated. We wanted to keep climbing towards the ley line, but the moment we were over the lake...
You started taking damage, Constantine finished. Probably the game world's way of keeping you from climbing all the way to the ley line and bypassing the jungle.
I didn't think of it that way, but that actually makes sense,
Ignis acknowledged with a nod before resuming his explanation.
Either way, we realized that there was no way we could continue towards the ley line, so we decided to climb down and take a closer look at the ether, since it didn't quite look right, based on what we saw from both your feed and what we saw leaking from the ley line.
What do you mean it didn't look right?
I asked, my voice taking on a dangerous tone as I mentally prepared myself for what he was about to say.
Well,
Ignis replied, this time hesitantly as he sensed the undercurrent of my voice.
It was tinted slightly green?
Of course it was!
I barked, seeing Ignis and all his group members cringe at the reluctant admission.
And what about the warning that we gave everyone when we led you into this ruin? Specifically the part that sounded something along the lines of, if you see any ether crystals that happen to be glowing green, stay the hell away from it and tell us! Because the last one we saw contained an endless horde of angry ghosts that nearly killed us. I remember,
Ignis answered in a small voice.
But it wasn't a crystal, so we didn't think.
Oh, goddamn right you didn't think,
Lazarus hissed from beside me.
Why the hell would there be a difference?
I don't know,
the half-elf exclaimed, raising his hands in front of him.
We didn't think that you were being honest. You already have control of all the other ether in the area. We just figured that the green type was just more valuable or something. Are you serious right now, Ignis?
Freya barked angrily.
You thought we were warning you out of greed?
Ignis countered weakly, his arms falling to his sides before he shrugged.
Like you said, we fucked up.
And you all decided to keep fucking up, Sierra exclaimed. Because when you did get close enough to the tainted ether, and all the spirits started coming out of everywhere, you decided to run.
Actually, most of us just died on the spot as soon as the spirits started to appear,
the same elf that had spoken earlier stated.
We didn't get a chance to do anything.
Which means that you were one of the ones dumb enough to actually get close to the ether in the first place, Sierra snapped.
Fine, I'll admit to that, the elf replied while pointing a finger at Ignis. But he's the one who dragged the spirits back here. None of us were stupid enough to do that.
Thanks, Hedo,
Ignis hissed, turning to glare at the man who'd just thrown him under the bus.
Do you want to say that a bit louder? I don't think the entire camp heard you the first time.
Screw you, the elf started to reply. Enough,
I spat, cutting off the argument before it could gain any more steam. It was obvious that Ignis's group was in the process of fracturing, but I also didn't consider that to be my problem to fix. If they wanted to fight among themselves, they could very well go ahead and do it, just as long as they did it after I was done with them. I glared at the group until I was sure that none of them would interrupt me, then shifted my attention to Ignis.
So, you ran, I prompted the half-elf, watching his expression carefully as he replied.
You know I did,
he admitted petulantly.
The moment that I saw the spirits start pulling themselves out of the lake, I took off. I figured that if I moved fast enough, that they'd lose interest in me like the grove creatures usually do if you run far enough.
But they clearly didn't,
Lazarus observed with a growl.
No, Ignis replied with a sigh. I made it most of the way through the jungle before I realized that they were chasing, and then I really started to panic.
Have you ever heard of Hanlon's razor, Ignis?
I asked, bringing up my hands to rub my temples as I considered what he had just told me. I knew that there was likely more to the story that he wasn't telling me, or had decided to leave out, like how he'd even managed to get through the jungle alive. But after hearing his explanation so far, I found myself hard-pressed to want to hear it.
It doesn't ring a bell, he said uneasily. What is it?
An aphorism, I explained, taking my hands away from my face as I gave him a resigned look, feeling the anger in me fizzle and morph into a dull exhaustion that began to radiate through my body. Loosely translated, it means never attribute to malice that which is adequately explained by stupidity, which is the only way that I could even begin to rationalize everything you just told me. If you somehow actually set out to maliciously destroy this camp, I don't know how you could have possibly done a better job, short of literally not running into me when you did. Reddening at my explanation, I saw a look of anger, frustration, and embarrassment come across Ignis's face as he glared back at me, immediately replying back in a sarcastic tone.
I guess I'll have to try harder next time.
Don't make shit worse for us with your damn attitude!
Hedo spat as he suddenly shoved Ignis from behind, causing him to stumble forward.
Bad enough we stood by you when you opened your fat mouth last week and got us blackballed by half the adventurers here!
Oh, fuck!
The beginning of a curse flew out of Ignis's mouth as he caught himself and spun towards Hedo, only to have the elf's fist slam into the side of the man's face, sending him falling straight to the ground. Almost immediately, the rest of Ignis's group rushed forward to attack him, all of them managing to land several blows before any of us had the presence of mind to intervene and separate them.
Stop!
I found myself shouting as I grabbed hold of the elf that had started the impromptu brawl and pulled him off of Ignis, who lay groaning on the ground before us.
That's enough!
I think we've gotten all we're going to, Lyrian, Freya told me as she held the twisted arm of a thin half-orc in a tight grip. They're ready to kill one another at this point.
Looks like it, I agreed, looking down at Ignis, who was slowly pulling himself together with a dazed expression on his face. Then that's it?
Hedo asked. Breathing hard from the brief exertion, all the other adventurers falling behind him as the group released them.
We can go? You're not going to punish us?
For what? Being stupid? I replied half-heartedly as I motioned for the group to step back while Ignis picked himself up off the ground, his hand covering a broken and bleeding nose.
There's no point in doing that. Besides, I think having your soul fragments trapped in the middle of the jungle is more punishment than anything I could inflict at the moment. Ugh!
Hedo grunted as he and everyone else behind him visibly deflated at that reminder.
I forgot about that.
Good luck recovering it, I replied, doing my best to project an honest tone in my voice. But with that being said, if you guys want to keep fighting between yourselves, go do it in the grove or on the surface, anywhere but the camp.
Noted,
Hedo said, giving Ignis one last glare before promptly turning around and leaving with the other three adventurers into the camp without another word. Staring at their departure for a moment, Ignis gave us all a dirty glance, before turning around and heading in the opposite direction, by himself, leaving us all standing by ourselves as we watched the two groups depart.
Well, that turned out to be a little bit more entertaining than I was expecting, Lazarus said, exhaling sharply. We should have let them beat on one another a bit longer, though.
Talking to them was a waste of time, Sierra said in a frustrated tone. I'm not sure I completely buy anything Ignis told us, or how he had the dumb luck to run through half the jungle without getting jumped by a creature, but damned if his groupmates were pissed. That part was definitely honest.
Well, they should be pissed, Constantine stated. You hear what they said about being blackballed. I have a feeling that sort of resentment has been brewing for a while.
Does anyone know anything about that? I asked curiously, scanning everyone's faces. Has everyone who originally stood with Ignis the other week been getting the cold shoulder from the rest of the adventurers?
I don't know, Freya replied with a shrug. You'd have to ask Dunedin. If anyone's instigating against Ignis and his group, it'd be him. He took it a bit personally when Ignis pulled his stunt the other week.
Huh, I grunted, recognizing the name as belonging to the dwarf that had stood up in favor of Virtus when we had first announced the discovery of the Nefarian ruin and the ley line. I'd made it a point to thank him once everything had settled that day, but I couldn't really recall seeing him since then. Has anyone seen him lately? I sure haven't.
I have, Constantine said. He's been working with Jenkins and Rick quite a fair bit. Something about having found a huge vein of metal in the grove.
Wait, that was him? I asked, remembering what the pair had told me just a few hours earlier. Shit, I didn't know.
If you had the time to keep up on camp gossip and everyone's whereabouts, on top of everything that you were doing already, Lyrian, I'd be shocked.
Lazarus grumbled, as it is. I've no idea when you even find the time to sleep.
I've learned to get by on the little I get while blinking, I replied dryly, prompting a chuckle from the half-giant.
But given what happened today, I think it would be good to check what the general attitude among the adventurers is like. The last thing we can afford is fighting amongst ourselves when we have this world event to worry about now.
I'll see if I can track him down once we're done here, Constantine promised.
The rest of us can keep our ears open, too, Freya added. I'm sure we can ask the rest of the guild members if they're hearing anything, too.
Hopefully it's just Ignis and his group, I said optimistically, running my hand through Amaranth's fur as I spoke. And not a bigger issue for us to worry about.
Speaking of bigger issues, Constantine said, changing the topic, what are we going to do about this, what did that gizmo call it?
Spectral infestation,
Sierra supplied, prompting Constantine to nod in thanks.
Right, he acknowledged. This massive new spectral infestation that Ignis and his team of idiots kicked off. I don't think we can turn the ley line off as easily as we did that infected crystal back upstairs.
Well, we can seal it, I said, assuming we can find the remaining runestones and decipher the spell inscribed on them.
That may keep the problem from getting worse, Constantine admitted. But that weird green ether is still going to be there, right?
Won't we have to figure out a way of getting rid of that, too? I honestly don't know, I replied, shrugging my shoulders with resignation.
I feel like we've been tossed in the deep end regarding all this ether stuff. First, it mutates every living thing it touches, and now, apparently, it can sort of bring the dead back to life.
Or the dead can use it to come back to life, Freya added, offering a different perspective. Don't forget about what the Slave King did. He used the ether at that Arovian tower to come back to life, too.
Yeah, but he wasn't like the other spirits. He actually had his shit together when he came back, I said. These spirits are mindless, just driven by emotion, vengeance in their case. They aren't...
I'm gonna stop you right there, Lear,
Constantine stated, cutting me off before I could finish my thought.
Before your complaints start giving the game world ideas...
Do you really want to be fighting all these spirits if they were actually smart and had a better sense of tactics?
No, I agreed, realizing that I might have very well been jinxing myself. Dumb and swarming is perfect. Forget I said anything at all.
As much as I agree with the both of you, that doesn't get us any closer to answers, Sierra said with a sigh. Assuming there are any answers to this?
Well, I'm not exactly an expert on this Nefarian stuff. Lazarus interjected. But there was one thing in that world event alert that stood out for me.
There was? I asked as we all turned to look at the big half-giant curiously. Sure, he said, his eyes temporarily losing focus as he brought the notice up in his vision. Specifically the part that said, bringing forth a vengeful host denied passage to their eternal slumber. The spirits are clearly the vengeful host, but it's that second part that's interesting. It mentions that they weren't able to pass on. Now, I don't know about you guys, but based on that, it's not a far mental stretch to assume that something is holding them there against their will.
Like what, though?
Freya queried as we all processed Lazarus's train of thought. I have no idea how the afterlife or any of that sort of stuff is handled in Ascend Online, at least from the NPC's perspective. The adventurer version of it is pretty clear-cut.
Me either, Lazarus replied with a shrug. But look at what we've faced so far here. Both in the dungeon above and now in the grove. The dead clearly aren't moving on to whatever type of afterlife they should be.
That's a really good point, I said, feeling Lazarus's insight had a great deal of merit to it. Well, I guess we should find out what happens when someone dies.
How do you plan on doing that, Lear? Constantine asked me. That's not something that we can exactly test.
Easy. I told the rogue as I motioned for everyone to follow me. We do what most people have been doing for thousands of years when faced with questions about death.
And what's that?
Constantine asked as he fell in beside me, one eyebrow raised curiously.
We ask a priest,
I replied, flashing a smile in his direction. Or in our case, a priestess. Chapter 48. Moving with purpose, it didn't take long for us to make it to the healing ward at the rear of the camp, to where I hoped to find Shelia and get a better understanding of how the general theology of the world worked, or at least what people generally believed happened. I didn't know if any of the information would be useful or even pertain to our particular situation with the spectral infestation that was currently afflicting the Twilight Grove, but Lazarus's words had resonated with me pretty strongly, leaving me with one recurring thought that I couldn't quite wrap my head around. Why have none of the Nefar in this ruin moved on to their afterlife? Was it because they all died in anger? I asked myself as I slowly filtered through the common tropes about ghosts that I'd seen or read over my lifetime, trying to pick one that would fit our current situation. Or is it because they're trapped here somehow? Or maybe there's some sort of echo of sentience caught by the ether and not really ghosts at all. Halting my train of thought as we entered the healing ward, I was happy to find the place quiet and completely devoid of patients, any wounded from the attack having long since been mended and sent on their way. After entering the area, it didn't take long for the sounds of our feet to draw Shelia's attention, her head poking free from one of the far blinds moments before the rest of her body followed. "We're not injured," I said by way of greeting, after seeing her eyes drop down to inspect our bodies, searching for wounds or broken limbs.
"I figured as much,"
Shelia replied in a tired tone as her eyes darted up to meet mine.
"It seems to be a new habit that I've picked up after my time down here. But what can I do for all of you? I'm surprised to see you all still up after that battle and all the clean-up."
"I'm sure we'll turn in soon enough," I replied, despite knowing full well that sleep was a distant hope for me.
"We're actually here because we have a few questions that we're hoping to get your perspective on as a priestess."
"Oh?"
Shelia asked, her curiosity suddenly piqued.
"What about?"
"What happens to someone's soul when they die?" I queried, seeing her eyes widen in surprise.
"Now that," she replied, exhaling a deep breath as she spoke, "is quite the question, Lyrian." "Which is why we all came to you,"
Freya said as she joined the conversation.
"As adventurers, we're well aware of what happens to our souls if we die. But we also know that we're an exception to the rule. We wanted to get a better understanding of what a regular person's soul may face when they pass." "This is because of the attack by the Nefarian spirits?"
Shelia asked, her eyes scanning all of ours.
"That's right,"
I replied, giving the red-haired priestess a nod, not surprised with how quickly she had come to that conclusion. "If we're to find a way to defeat them, or at least manage them somehow, we're hoping to understand why they're still here and haven't moved on to whatever afterlife that they believed in."
"And to do that, you want an idea of what a soul would normally do after its death?"
Shelia said, nodding at our logic.
Very well. I think I understand your question a little bit better now. But before I answer it, perhaps we should sit down first. This is not a conversation to have standing, or one to rush.
Without another word, Sheila motioned for us to follow her and led us behind the blind that we had seen her appear from just a few moments earlier, revealing an area with several chairs and a pair of tables with pitchers of water and food on top of them. With a wave, she motioned for us to take our seats, taking one for herself, and waited patiently until we'd all finished moving.
I admit, I find myself at a bit of a loss at where to start,
Sheila admitted as she looked out towards us.
When trying to answer what comes after death, all the scriptures and rituals of my faith come to mind, along with their meaning and symbolism. But I don't believe that is what you are all looking for, so with that, I will try and explain what I can, and hope that helps somehow.
Sheila looked down for a moment as she collected her thoughts, then glanced back up towards us.
When a soul's vessel, their body dies, she began, there's several things that may happen, depending on their soul's temperament and the life that it led before its death. Should it have been a faithful soul, one that actively worshipped and devoted itself to a god, then it will find itself called to join that god's host and pass out of this plane of existence, where it will be judged, and then find whatever paradise that their particular faith exalts, if they're found to be worthy.
Sheila explained, slowly making eye contact with each of us as she spoke.
Out of all the paths a soul may take, this is the most common. Yet, in the cases where a soul was faithless, or did not profess any strong belief in a single deity, or...
Sheila paused for a moment as her lips tightened.
Died in the grip of strong emotional upheaval, then things tend to get a bit more complicated.
It looks like I wasn't too far off with one of my earlier guesses after all, I thought as I listened to Sheila speak.
When a faithless or divided soul passes, they are judged by the gods on the virtues that they possessed in life, such as valor, altruism, kindness, or any of the countless others that can define a person's existence,
the priestess continued.
And depending on the conviction behind those virtues, the soul may find itself called by a particular deity who personifies that virtue the strongest, even if they weren't adherents to the faith it represents.
And those that aren't called? Sierra asked.
Then they are lost,
Sheila answered with a sad note in her voice.
They remain forever trapped in a state between life and death until their soul fades away into oblivion. However, as we all saw today, there are some souls that somehow manage to keep their essences from fading, often returning as a mockery of life in the form of undead. This is also where we most commonly find the last kind of soul that I mentioned.
The ones who died with strong emotions, Freya stated.
Indeed,
Sheila acknowledged.
Those who die in such a state often have their souls consumed with whatever emotion they passed with, often making it difficult for them to hear the call of their god, or in some cases deafening them from it entirely. In every case, they return as an undead creature in some way, shape, or form, seeking some sort of revenge against the living or those they believe that have wronged them.
And from the looks of it, Lazarus said, we have an entire cavern of that exact kind to deal with.
It certainly seems that way,
Sheila agreed in a small voice.
I heard their mental chant as they attacked the camp. Even after all this time, they are incredibly angry. Defiant, even.
They think that they are still at war,
I said, recalling their voices all too well.
And they think that we are the invading Arovians,
Freya added, turning to look towards me as she spoke.
The specters we fought at the ruins' entrance said as much before they attacked.
I'm sure it didn't help that we were wearing Arovian armor at the time, I noted, looking down at my new set of armor, then back towards the others, who all still wore the blackened chainmail sets that I'd repaired from the scraps found in the fallen Arovian tower.
Maybe not,
Sheila agreed.
But such a traumatized spirit may not have been able to make that distinction. They would have likely treated anyone as invaders.
I suppose, I said, offering the priestess a small shrug as I thought back to our encounter at the ruin entrance. I'm reminded about what the specters said when they died. They threatened to destroy this place if their defense failed.
I remember that too, Lazarus commented thoughtfully. Do you think that's what actually happened here centuries ago? That the Nefar destroyed their own city to keep the Arovians from capturing it?
I don't know, I replied, shaking my head at the thought. To sacrifice an entire city just because you're losing? That seems a bit extreme.
Not when the option is death anyway, Lazarus said. We have no idea of what the war being fought was like, and given that none of the Nephar that lived in Iberia survived the city's fall...
Lazarus let his words hang in the air, everyone understanding what was left unsaid. If the war between the Arovians and the Nephar was so brutal that they'd willingly destroy their own city, with themselves still in it, then they must have felt like they had no other option. They could have wanted to go out on their own terms, Sierra offered, breaking the silence. If they knew they were going to die no matter what.
It is a good theory, Shealia said. That would certainly explain the spirit's anger and desire for vengeance. Such a vicious and genocidal conflict would make our war with the orcs look like a schoolyard fight between children.
That's right.